Tomorrow, the history will be palpable in the nation's capital, and it will also be on the plates of certain individuals who will be lunching on Inauguration Day. Is that fair to say, Melissa Clark?
Absolutely.
All right, Melissa Clark is with us, which means that the studio is filled with
fabulous
smells.
Oh, you just smell what's happening in here.
And I said, why is Melissa coming in tomorrow? And I was told that the reason Melissa is here is because there is a lunch tomorrow that Barack Obama is having that is modeled after an actual lunch Abraham Lincoln had, lo, these many, many years ago. Explain.
Well, it's not modeled after one particular lunch that Abraham Lincoln had. In fact, the inaugural luncheon is a fairly recent party. They didn't used to have inaugural luncheons until 1953. Before that, it was more of a casual thing. But what the lunch is, what Barack Obama is going to eat tomorrow is based on Abraham Lincoln's favorite foods.
Really?
Yeah. So historically, what they did was they went to the White House records and they dug up meals that he had in the past, and they went through his diaries and letters and looked for ingredients that he said that he loved. For example, one thing that you've got in front of you right there is apples. It's I made a little apple Charlotte, and Abraham Lincoln loved apples. Who knew? He also loved wild game birds. He loved seafood. So the menu tomorrow is based on all these things. And let me tell you what it is, because it looks really good. It's a little bit, you know, it's a little bit stodgy, but I would say that it's very historically accurate. We've got a seafood stew, which is Abraham Lincoln loved oysters. Oysters were a luxury item back then. They're still a luxury item. So this seafood stew is made with oysters and lobster and scallops. It's put into a cream sauce, puff pastry on top, baked in the oven, and that's the first course.
That sounds good.
Second course, wild game birds. We've got pheasant and duck with a cherry chutney, which I also brought you some cherry chutney to taste.
And you made this.
I did. Well, we wanted to get into the spirit of the inauguration at our house, too, so we had a little pre-inaugural feast ourselves.
Now, tell me a little bit about chutney. It's always been kind of a mystery food to me, because you look at what's in the chutney and you go, I don't recognize anything. And you say to yourself, so how do you make chutney? What distinguishes chutney from, say, any other kind of preserve or something?
It's the spices.
Uh-huh.
Because chutneys are filled with amazing spices. And this one has cumin and it has cinnamon, and clove, and all kinds of wonderful things. And that just gives it this deep, rich flavor.
I was really struck in looking at some of the recipes. They are so labor intensive.
Oh my God,
yes. And I think that really speaks to the time period when there was a lot of help in the White House.
There's still a lot of help in the White House. The caterers that they have just, I'm sure, have tons of staff. But yeah, back then, I mean, this was a meal that would have taken probably at least two or three people in the kitchen for every single guest. And today, there's about 200 guests, but sometimes they had thousands of guests for these meals. So we're talking about just an intense amount of people who are, you know, cooking for them.
I mean, listen to her rattling off facts about chutney and Lincoln and all this. I mean, New York Times food writer, I mean, you know, this is the New York Times. This is our partners. This is the strength of our partnership here. So Melissa Clark.
Yes. Oh,
well, thank you.
So what's the main dish? What's the main dish? Actually, I forgot to identify you as New York Times. So as far as anyone knows, you know,
I'm just printed off the street.
Right.
I happen to have these things with me.
Yes. So the main course is?
The main course is what they're calling a brace of American birds, pheasant and duck, with sour cherry chutney and whipped molasses sweet potatoes. And they're going to enjoy that dish a lot. What they've done, though, is instead of using a typical, you know, normally when you have game birds, they're roasted. They've made it a little bit more fancy, and they've taken the breast off the birds and they've prepared the breast separately. So the president doesn't have to deal with bones or anything like that. He's just got the beautiful breast meat on the plate. So.
But there's also logic.
No chewing.
It's just an IV. But there's some logic for that. I mean, particularly with game birds, you cook the breast separately because it cooks at a different rate and it dries out much more easily.
Especially with pheasant. That's a great point. And this pheasant that they're serving is stuffed with wild rice. So it's going to be really moist and delicious, I think.
Now, listen to long before he was president-elect and long before he was even senator, when he was just a person who might wander into a cooking show on a public TV station in Chicago, Illinois, Barack Obama said this as kind of his deep food aesthetic.
I'm not looking for some fancy presentation or, you know, extraordinarily subtle flavors. I mean, what I'm looking for is food that tastes good for a good price.
That's Barack Obama back in 2001 on WTTW's program Check Please, which is all about, like, restaurant reviews in Chicago. Probably not a good price, this meal.
Well, he's not. Well, I guess he's sort of paying out of pocket, actually, since it's his budget
exactly.
now, right?
That's right. That's right.
But it should be good food that tastes good. I think it's gonna be a little on the fancy side for him, but I think he'll enjoy it.
Do you think that's consistent with the Lincoln idea here, that Lincoln maybe had food that he loved but was not someone who, you know, went out of his way to eat extravagant food when he was in the White House?
Oh, I'm sure he didn't. You know, he had a very modest upbringing. That's one thing that links him to future President Obama, is a very modest upbringing. And I think that he probably... I think that the foods that he loved would have been prepared very simply. You know, I think what we're getting today is... It's just gone upscale. It's gone one or two steps fancier because, well, you know, that's the time. So.
And they're both two, you know, amazing American stories, Barack Obama and Abraham Lincoln. I mean, you mentioned that he had modest upbringing,
yes.
but it was also an upbringing in the middle of the frontier. I mean, in southern Illinois, Kentucky, the log cabin upbringing. I mean, you know, this cuisine is very much the kind of thing that families would subsist on. He grew up with foods that, you know, came from, you know, like the acres, you know, just across the hill.
Oh, yeah. He would have been shooting these birds. They would not have been farm-raised. He would have been out there getting his own.
Yeah.
And he definitely wouldn't have taken the breast off and stuffed it with the nice wild rice. I mean, it would have been a much more rustic presentation.
And, you know, there's an environmental story there, too. Oysters were abundant back in the middle 1800s.
Were.
I mean, not like today. I mean, I bet his oysters tasted much better than our oysters.
Well, you know, it's interesting because he was in the middle of the country. You know, he grew up in Indiana and Kentucky. It's not exactly oyster central there. They had to be shipped a long distance from the East Coast or from... I guess from the East Coast, probably. And so that was what made them a luxury item, was the travel,
right, the transport,
getting those oysters fresh to the middle of the
luxury,
country.
Not in Baltimore, but certainly in Springfield,
exactly.
Illinois. Well, Melissa Clark, as always, it is a delight. And I need to say goodbye to you so that I can start eating the food
that you left here.
So Melissa Clark, food writer for The New York Times, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And certainly a message there that Barack Obama is sending and adopting Abraham Lincoln's eating habits. But today we're looking at MLK because it is MLK Day, and we're wondering what are some of those themes and issues and things that MLK stood for that still live today. Give us your thoughts. Saul writes, if he were here now, Dr. King would surely devote his efforts to stamping out political correctness so that people would really be judged by their character. What do you think? What would MLK be organizing today? 8778-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. And here's your takeaway.
They've gone skiing. They've gone to Vegas. They've gone to New York. So the Republicans are not sticking around for all this hoopla this week.
That's The Takeaway. It's Andrea Bernstein in D.C. talking about what's happening this week as power shifts in Washington. We're always on, and if you missed anything, take our podcast to go. You can subscribe now at thetakeaway.org or on iTunes. I'm Adora Udoji.
I love that image of the GOP leaving town to
skiing.
Go play craps in Las Vegas.
Yeah,
skiing
see, in
see Vegas. If they can have any good luck at the crap table. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.